Welcome to the Reimagine Today podcast, where we talk to people about their stories and experiences of the NDIS. I'm Charles Manila, the host of the Reimagine Today podcast, and in this episode, I'll be joined by Sophie Duterte from the Centre of Culture, Ethnicity and Health, and Muhammad Umar, a support coordinator from NEMI National and an NDIS participant. This podcast explores the lives of people who experience psychosocial disability, family and carers, workers and professionals, and their personal stories regarding accessing and understanding the NDIS, with a particular focus on the experiences of people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds. We hope that their stories will shed light on the wider social issues facing a diverse array of people wanting to access mental health and disability services. This episode is part of a multi-episodic series called NDIS Back to Basics, where we'll be discussing the complexities of the key language used when discussing the NDIS and some of the cultural barriers individuals may face regarding access and understanding the NDIS. Please note that this episode and the series as a whole involves discussions of sensitive topics that can be distressing or uncomfortable. We advise that you listen to this somewhere you feel safe, and if you're affected by the content, pause the recording and take a break. We also advise that you consider speaking to someone you trust or calling a helpline for support. Thank you. I'm joined by Sophie and Mo, but feel free to introduce yourselves.
My name is Sophie Duterte. I work for the Centre for Culture, Ethnicity and Health, which is part of North Richmond Community Health. And more specifically, I work on an NDIS project where I train interpreters and bicultural workers in understanding the NDIS and being able to explain or interpret NDIS terminology in very simple ways.
And my name is Muhammad Umar. I am support coordinator at NEMI National. I'm also NDIS participant.
Welcome, everyone. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are meeting. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be here today. I would also like to acknowledge all people who have personal experience of mental illness, whether as consumers, carers, or workers. Your voices, insights, and experiences are invaluable and important. Keep fighting to be heard. It goes without saying, if we were ever to tackle the complexities of NDIS language, it would be remiss to forget about possibly the most important key terminology involved, psychosocial disability. Sophie, what exactly is psychosocial disability, and how does that relate to mental health?
Yes, psychosocial is a word that many people don't understand, and that's partly because it was not so much created by the NDIS, but certainly popularized by the NDIS, and it's become a term that's used very often. And because I work with interpreters, I'm always very conscious that the person on the other side is someone who doesn't speak English or has limited English, but also might have limited literacy or education. And so even if a word exists in their language, it doesn't mean they'll understand it. And psychosocial is a case in point. It really needs to be explained. The way I explain it in my training is to say it's about the way you interact with the world, you engage with the world. So the example I give is you can have anxiety and manage it, and whether it's through medication or through some personal techniques, you go to work, you have a social life. People around you might not be aware that you've got anxiety. Or you can have anxiety that means you can't leave your house, you're scared of crowds, you're scared of being in a closed space, you have claustrophobia. The anxiety actually stops you from engaging with the world around you. That is when it becomes a psychosocial disability. That's how I explain it.
Mo, what was the first thought you had when you heard that term, psychosocial disability?
I have probably heard that far more often in the past couple of years, and that's obviously due to the NDIS. But before that, I do believe that when I came across it, I just assumed that that was a word that is just in the dictionary literal kind of meaning and understanding from just the scientific point of it. And it's not something that's necessarily used in everyday life. But it's kind of been interesting because for me, mental health issues is something that people are more familiar with in terms of understanding. And from my experiences of someone from a child background and who's also been involved in the welfare sector for the past 11, 12 years, I've always kind of, you know, encountered a lot of unexpected reactions from people whenever mental health was mentioned, simply because mental health, if it is kind of translated or interpreted into different languages to some people, it just means something that's completely different, which basically means something that's got to do health issues in terms of your mental state. I know that for me personally, that was something that I've experienced initially that came from my original understanding of well-being as not an issue where well-being is an issue where you feel like you're functioning as a human being. As long as you're functioning, that's fine. But then when you kind of come across the challenges that kind of commit people to be living in a life that is full of struggle and challenges and a lot of issues, then that is a life that you're used to. And your life does not necessarily mean that you are going through anything or you don't really think that there is a different aspect of life. So you accept that. So that is a point blank. So the idea of a psychosocial disability is kind of interesting and I think take from my perspective. But I also know that people that have not been involved to, in the clinical side of things in terms of understanding mental health, especially from health communities, that it is something that they completely do not understand it. It's something that they completely are not open to talk about it in terms of their health issues, especially if it's about their mental health.
Sophie, anything to add to that?
Just, I think, following up on Mo, when you talk about struggles and people's struggles, I think that is such a good point because it must be hard, I imagine, for some people to separate the struggles of their life from the struggles that is caused by their disability, especially if it's a mental health issue. It's just something that occurs to me when I'm listening to you, that people might experience struggles and they might associate them with external factors rather than identifying that it is something that's related to a mental health issue.
And yes, I do agree. I mean, I think one of the probably most prevalent issue that I've noticed within the CALC community in terms, especially people that have recently arrived from war-torn countries. I mean, the idea that going through so much trauma and not really understanding what that really meant for them. I mean, PTSD is something that's very, very prevalent, and I see that everywhere. And people just say, well, it's okay, it's just life, and you move on with it. But you also see the negative impacts of those, of these traumas and of these issues that people are going through every day that they do not have the capacity to deal with it, and they do not know the importance of dealing with it, and they do not know to address issues that are kind of side effects of some of those issues. And it's kind of interesting because it's almost like trying to and tell somebody about something that they know nothing about. So the idea that people are expected to understand their mental health and when they don't know themselves what mental health is. Eventually, I think it comes down to knowledge. It comes down to education. It comes down to awareness. And that's something that has probably been the most lacking in terms of the frontline of welfare. I think welfare organizations and the welfare system. And I'm speaking especially in regards to Kaul communities here.
One of the things I heard from what you were saying was the concept of trauma. Has that been difficult to explain to Kaul communities in your experience?
I'd rather let Mo speak about that because it's not something I have huge experience in, but certainly listening to you, Mo, it's reminding me of the time when I worked with asylum seekers and with newly arrived people on refugee visas. And, you know, people would say, oh, I'm depressed because I don't have a job, I don't have a proper house. And then they would get a job and they would get proper accommodation and they would get all these external things and they'd still be sad. And they'd be like, why am I still sad? Because I've got all those things I wanted. And especially if someone got a permanent visa, for instance, and they thought this would be the answer to all their problems. And it wasn't. So it's what you're saying about if people don't know there is such a thing as a problem with mental health, a mental health issue, then when they're not happy, just, you know, to put it in very simple terms, they don't quite know what the cause of it could be.
Any thoughts on that, Mo?
I agree. I agree 100%. I mean, I am speaking of my experiences. For example, I came over when I was in my late teens. I mean, my understanding of the world was just my experiences, but I came here with huge expectations and the idea that, you know, life is going to completely change for you and you don't have to deal with whatever that most people are, trying to settle, whatever most people are trying to, you know, get away from when they're trying to settle in some new country. I mean, the concept of psychosocial disability being a socially generated disability, which basically means and deficiencies that occur due to issues within the social aspect of a human being. I mean, that would categorically put people from Kaul backgrounds in that space. I mean, they have mostly left an environment where there was wars, there was a famine, there was a hunger, there was a lot of issues, and to go through all of that, I mean, to just get to the place where you finally are resettled, people never really understand what it is that people have went through to get to that position. I did eventually realize that, well, I am here now, my life has changed, and in terms of my needs as a human being, my needs have completely changed, because I understood that my needs initially were about the necessities of life. You're talking about, you know, food, shelter, and security, and once you get that, then you are socially isolated just to begin with, and you have no sense of community, then you also realize that our natural tendencies of happy life do not necessarily just mean finding the basic things. And you end up being more mentally exhausted, mentally stressed, mentally isolated than you've ever been before. And that for me was very unexpected experience. And it wasn't just for me. A big family that came here with me, and it was something that was common around, especially around young people that were in their late teens and even in the upper early 20s. And I could understand that all of a sudden people are just going, so what now? What am I supposed to do? And then you also have to deal with the issues that you've been through that you haven't really addressed, because you just assumed that that was just gonna be something that would go away. It took me a while to kind of really understand what it really truly meant, because you naturally kind of try to address your needs in terms of what you feel like you need with anything that you find possibly as a pain reliever. And people have a different coping mechanism. So people will have to fill that gap with something, because the services are not there to actually implement those kind of supports in the first place. And eventually, one of the most common side effects that I've seen was, you know, people start to rebel, because all of a sudden, those people that are in that position actually get a sense of that they're not actually wanted here, that they're not part of this community. And all of a sudden, you're in a limbo, and the next kind of step for young people is, you know, to go into wrong pathways, simply because there's no right pathway available. And when you have someone against the wall already that's dealing with so much, you can never really tell what would take them off or what would put them in a far more worse situation, because they don't simply at that point think that their life could actually get any worse.
I think from our discussion so far, what's clear is that there's a massive disparity between commonly used terminologies when talking about the NDIS and people's understanding of it, especially for people with cult backgrounds. It's a massive barrier. Also, it feels like there's an expectation for people of different cultures to immediately get on board with understanding it quite quickly and without regarding the possible issues that may arise from it. Drawing from what you were saying, Mo, concepts like happiness and necessities can be so different. Would you agree with that sentiment? And have you encountered issues like this with the people you're working for and with?
Definitely. I mean, that is something that's very, very prevalent in terms of the issues that people are going through, and the organizations that are at the front of, you know, of dealing with some of these issues are actually struggling, and they know it, but it's impossible to kind of deal with it from the perspective that, you know, services are dealing with it now, which is almost a band-aid for something that's far more, you know, significant to people. I mean, the idea that a person of a migrant background to just, you know, have a relationship with somebody to kind of just talk about their basic daily lives and issues to a completely stranger is something that's not very common. And it takes time and it takes effort to kind of build that relationship for people to be able to be in that position where they feel like, you know, they feel like they're confident enough to kind of share issues that are naturally kept, you know, under the closet for a lot of communities, simply because there is a sense of this stigma in terms of people dealing with mental health issues. The stigma of people even talking about, you know, their struggles, because, you know, that there's a sense of innate ability for individuals to kind of, you know, deal with things just as they come instead of dwell on, you know, talking about the issues or trying to deal with the issues. And that is different with, you know, a lot of people, but from my experience and from what I have seen, especially within the cult communities, especially people that have been the, you know, people that came from war-torn countries, or people that have come from a lot of trauma background, people have come from countries where the education system, the life standard and the everyday life was kind of challenging as a part of life. and the sense of, you know, the sense of the also that there is no relatability in terms of the person that you're sharing your story with. I think that's something that's really, really important that people really forget. It's representation matters in terms of, you know, seeing somebody that you feel like, you know, you have in common with. I mean, when you're just having a conversation with someone and you kind of figure out you have, you know, for example, you have one, you know, particular thing as a, we have one thing in common, whether it's a sport, whether it is, you know what I mean, movies or whatever it is, or whether it's an art, you naturally notice that your sense of closeness immediately changes. And it's just natural that people think, okay, now I feel like I can talk to this person. And that's how friendships are formed. That's how, you know, close life relationships are formed. And when you have people that feel like they can't really, they feel like not that they can't relate to you, but they feel like you might not be able to relate to them, I think that's kind of like puts them in a place where they feel like, well, there's no point of me talking about things that I feel uncomfortable talking about to myself at times to somebody that I feel like they are not actually in a position or they have never experienced themselves.
This was part one of a multi-part episodic series for the Reimagine Today podcast called NDIS Back to Basics, where I sat down and had a conversation with Sophie Duterte from the Centre of Culture, Ethnicity and Health, and Mohamed Umar, a support coordinator from NEMI National and an NDIS participant. Join us next time when we discuss about Mohamed's experience as a support coordinator, the importance of goals and aspirations, and what it feels like applying for the NDIS. I'm Charles Manila, the host for the Reimagine Today podcast, signing off. And remember, your voice matters, so keep the conversation going. This episode contained discussion of psychological distress and trauma. If, after listening to this episode, you need support, please reach out and talk to someone you trust. You can also reach out to the following services. Call Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636 for brief counselling and referrals. Or call Lifeline at 131114. If you need an interpreter, you can ask these services for one. If it is an emergency, call 000. Take care and stay safe.